Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic, man.
I got out paddling this weekend. You did.
Yes, I saw you posting that you were out paddling.
Collecting garbage and enjoying the day. Oh, Saturday was rainy, yucky.
Mm-hmm. What day did you go out?
Filled with
work.
Did
you go out on the sunny day or the rainy day?
The sunny day.
You should go out on the rainy days. They're just as nice.
And you when you get housework done.
You got a dry suit.
Yeah, and I'm making sure it stays dry. Inside and out.
I like paddling in the rain. Keeps other people
away. I don't mind that in the summer.
Yes. Yeah, this time of year, obviously, it's a little chilly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in the middle of summer with the rain, and it's some of the nicer days out there paddling in the water.
Yeah, John Brower, buddy John Brower there, he called up and said, do you want to go do some paddling this weekend? And I said, oh, I don't think I can Saturday. And he goes, good, because Sunday's better for me anyway. Like answers like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we headed out to Duffin's Creek Sunday morning, both in our own separate canoes. He puts like 60 pounds of water in a couple dry bags. Throws them in the front for ballast.
When we paddle with Camper Christine, I did that. We're all solo,
mm-hmm.
and my canoe doesn't paddle well solo, so I had my dry bag filled with water in the bow. Yeah,
a lot of people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And his thing is, well, when we're done, I can use the water in the bag to clean the inside and outside of the boat before I put it up on the roof of the car.
Yeah.
And then air dries on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
See? Some days. Takes brains, buddy. Just got to use the old noodle. The old smarticle particles, if you will. So we just went down to Duffin's Creek on Sunday. And I wanted to try out some new GoPro mounts on the canoe and get some test footage from various spots in the boat and see, you know, how things look. And because my GoPros, I can hook into my phone.
Okay.
Right? Problem is, I can only do one at a time. It takes a minute. And one kept acting up, and which they do. I was doing the GoPro turn off, bloop, 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 turn off, and then bloop, 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 bloop. I didn't say turn back on.
Yeah,
annoying. 57% battery. Your battery's low. Turning off now.
Yeah.
What?
I remember when we went with, what's his name? Two Man and a Canoe Guy, on the Trent Severn. The batteries just would, they'd be fully powered and then bleh, die.
Yeah.
And I remember being irritated because the commands, the voice command for turn it off and on was not trustworthy.
No, and you know you're getting more and more angry at it. Mm-hmm. So, but the phone, when I look at the phone, there's enable the preview.
Yeah.
So that way, if it's up front or something, I can see if it's...
Oh, if it's aimed right.
Crooked or aimed right, too high, too low, whatever. Yeah. I can zoom in, zoom out, all from the phone, right?
Oh, right on.
Which is really cool to be able to do that. But then you hit record on the phone and your GoPro starts recording, but when it's recording, it disables the preview.
Oh.
So you can't actually see to make sure, right?
Yeah.
So then when you hit stop recording, the preview comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't actually eat much of the phone battery either.
No?
No. I'm surprised. But again, if I've got two different GoPros, and I put a little sticker on the top of each one and two so that I know, okay, you got to join this Wi-Fi for camera one. Then you got to exit.
Yeah.
Then you got to join the Wi-Fi for camera two.
What version of GoPro do you have?
9.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What are they up to now?
I think 12 or 13, something like that. But, yeah. No, it does me. It's perfectly fine. I want to check out a couple of the mounts I've got and stuff like that, and took my audio recording gear to give it a whirl. I want to get in the marshes because I got a shotgun mic, right?
Oh, yeah.
And do some more birds. And I've done waterfalls and stuff like that before, but I want to get some bird calls and stuff. I have a couple of wireless new lav mics I wanted to test, but there were some issues we're trying to get it to work, and this is why we test gear before we take it out on a big trip. So I actually, I've now figured out what the deal was. The house has to do with phantom power and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, okay.
So I've corrected that. So now I have one of the, slots on my, Zoom F6 dedicated to my wireless lav mics. Mm-hmm. So now if we're in the canoe, two separate canoes, we can each have a lav mic.
Oh, and I can record, get audio for both.
For both of them.
Right on.
Right?
Well, that's a good idea.
Well, that's what
What's
I thought.
The range?
That's why I was taking it out in the boat on Sunday to find out.
Is it Bluetooth?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, what, 30 to 50 feet, depending on environmental conditions and so on?
Mm-hmm. So that's why I wanted to take it out there, just to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool. So, yeah, now that I've got that figured out, I'll take that out next time and see what happens.
Very cool.
But, yeah, I was thinking, okay, you know what? Get out on the water. We're going to go travel up for a bit because there's a bit of a headwind. So let's travel up the river. And then when we come back, I want to hang out at the marsh for a bit and do some audio recordings of
get some birds.
The birds and that. And we came back because there was tons there when we left.
Yeah.
And then when we came back, like 4 hours later, nothing. It's like, what?
Where'd they go?
Yeah. So
I wonder if it's because it either warmed up and they went off to enjoy the warmth or something scared them off.
Well, it was definitely warmer when we came back
because
it was one of those things you got the dry suit on, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, I got this extra shirt I'll put on because what we do now, just because it's easier, is I'll put the bottom half of my dry suit on and my shoes at home.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then I just tuck the arms in sort of thing, right? I can drive like that, no problems. And then when I get there, I just pull the rest of the dry suit up and over.
Yeah.
And then zip up.
But if you stop for gas, it looks funny.
If I stop for gas. I walked into somewhere dressed like that and just
what's going on?
But then, I mean, when we're back, it's just easy to take it right off, right? But I brought another heavy shirt to put over top as an extra layer. And I'm like, if it gets cool like this, I might need it. But it seems like it's getting a bit warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And with the whole dry suit done up and everything, it'll probably be warmer.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be down hidden by some of the marsh grasses. And then we're up the river. There's the trees and stuff and the bank. And yeah, I won't put it on. I'll bring it just in case.
Yeah,
I'm so glad I didn't put it on. I got back and I was like, yeah, it was nice and warm. But you can just take everything off and throw it in the back of the truck when you're done, right?
Yeah.
And the water level's rising a lot more than it was like a month ago. But everything, the bottom of that river is just like we're at the mouth is all like this gooey mud.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
So, yeah. So the minute you get out, you're just like sinking in this gooey mud. Or if you need to stop on the riverside and get out for a second to do something.
Yeah.
Like we were grabbing some garbage while we were like we always do, right? And there was one, I'm just going to try to get out. You can't get out because then you're just sinking up to your to your kneecap sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm
making
not,
a mess of the boat.
Yeah. Sorry, garbage gods, but it's staying there.
Mm-hmm. So that reminds me. So you guys, so he said he could use the bag of water to rinse and wash off the canoe before he puts it on the roof. Do we have, is there any wash stations anywhere around here?
No. No, I take it home and I wash it.
Yeah.
In my driveway or backyard.
I tend to only use my canoes on trips. I don't know that I've ever had it in Lake Ontario. But I've often wondered if I do use it in Lake Ontario, I would have to like spray it down with like a bleach mixture of something.
I use a soap, warm water soap thing.
Yeah.
Give it a scrub. Nothing massively.
Because you want to kill the little baby zebra mussels, right? Hmm. Something to think about. Because I remember, so when we did our June trip 2 years ago, on the way out from, I think, Opiongo,
we just saw south of
a wash station at the entrance.
Yeah, the ministry had a wash station there. And they could pull up and
pressure.
But that was more for boats, not.
That was for
big boats, fishing boats and bass boats and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they would do your kayak, but I don't know what that high-pressure spray. Are they just going to blow a hole through the side of your canoe?
Yeah, exactly.
Whoops. Yeah, oh, sorry about that. But it's clean,
especially
in that one spot. So spot, it's see-through.
I haven't heard of an issue yet in, like, parks, lakes and rivers and stuff of zebra mussels. Have you read? I know Lake Ontario
There's a few algae blooms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And different things, different weeds and stuff like that. And then, of course, out in Alberta, BC, and everything, they have such strict rules now with boats.
Oh, yeah.
Crossing coming in border. And crossing was the border.
Crossing from
other lakes across Canada. Yeah. Like, they've got to be out of the water so many weeks.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So, I can see why they're doing it, but I wonder how much of that's a money grab to get you to rent locally.
Well,
as it were, as opposed to using your own
boat. Yeah, I do get boat. That they're trying to avoid the invasive species, and yeah. It is a problem.
Oh, it definitely is. Mm-hmm. I can see. I always get tinged with a bit of...
It's a conspiracy.
Conspiracy. Yeah, that's all it is. But no, it was a nice day out. Now, the other morning, I was walking the dog, and I swear I heard a loon call fly over.
Oh, yeah?
I would 100% guarantee that was a loon call I heard. And because they got to be heading north now anyway, right? Yeah. And so when we were down, we saw there was a bird on the river ahead of us, diving, coming up, thinking, is that loon?
Oh.
Because it would have hit the river if he was looking for somewhere, right? And we got closer to it, and then we noticed it was around this one tree, going under, coming up, going under, coming up. We got up there, cormorant.
Oh, there you go.
Which hopefully wasn't finding anything up that river, fish-wise, because it'd definitely be a shame if they started hanging out farther up from the shoreline of Lake Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're decimating the shoreline of...
They're so destructive.
Yeah.
And they are in fact an invasive species. As our summers get warmer, it's not just ticks that are moving north, it's the cormorants, which, what are you going to do? It's just a fact of life. It's going to happen.
Maybe the cormorants carry the ticks and drop them and then pick them up again as they head south.
Maybe.
Conspiracy theories.
We are in full-blown cormorant season at my work. We're right on the waterfront. I've shown you photos of my
vehicle
being pooped on
last year.
So yeah, it's we've been taking haphazard stabs at bird control at my work, and it's just getting worse.
Well, people are bad last year.
Yeah, but it's just like we're not allowed to do anything to the birds. We can only harass them to stop them from nesting. We can't do anything else because there's rules, right? So, but there's so many this year. Like, there's a section of parking lot right now under a tower, and they've had to cordon it off and stop people from parking there because at the end of every day you'd walk out to the parking lot and there'd be like 15 cars that are completely white. And it's like, so, and today,
and that's acidic too.
It is very acidic, and but it covers the car so much. Like I parked there one time last summer and didn't do it again in the summer, but I remember driving home. Like, I managed to get somewhat see-through front windshield, and I had to take it home and power wash it right away. It was just covered. Yeah. I remember passing people and getting double takes constantly, people walking or people driving or whatever. It's like, whoa, what happened to him? Because it looked like somebody poured white paint over my vehicle.
That's when you're going to the local car wash? Yes. Could I get 7 washes, please?
Exactly. Yeah, it's full on cormorant season at work. And
anybody parking there yet?
Somebody did park there today. I didn't see it myself, but I heard other people in our cubicle farm were I saw somebody drove past the barriers and parked under the tower because they had cordoned off the parking lot. Prime parking, nice and close to work, rockstar parking. But that one tower where all the cormorants are trying to nest, it's so somebody parked there was a. What does it say? It was some work truck and a small vehicle, small car, and both just got lambasted. And they're like, well, that'll teach you. Now you understand what the barricades are for.
That'll learn you.
And one of the things, too, is just one of the, because I had to do some research because I was encouraging them to do more. And I said, listen, I just looked it up on the CDC website. So bird flu... This, on the CDC website, to date, there have been worldwide 952 people who have caught bird flu.
This year?
No, since people caught bird flu.
Oh, okay.
So it's rare to get it, but 952 people have been recorded as having it. And according to the CDC, if you catch bird flu, you have a 49% chance of dying from it.
Oh, so less than half.
Yes, yeah, it's good. It's good. It's less than half. Just less 51% chance you're going to survive.
Right?
But yeah, it's that problematic. It's not like measles or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, it's so
you can go and start wrestling the cormorants. Give them a stern talking to.
Yes. You darn bird. Leave. But yeah.
So are they on flat roofs? Nesting?
We do.
Because why don't you just put like netting so they can't actually land?
I'm not sure why you couldn't do that, but it seems reasonable. Or just put a bunch of like
owls.
Well
they, you did the hawk thing already.
They did a hawk thing. So they did an 8-foot pole with a hawk kite on a 6-foot lead, and it flew around the roof, and it kept the seagulls and the cormorants away maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then they got used to that little kite flopping and running around in the wind, and they all came back. The seagulls came back first. We sit there in the windows at work and watch. And, oh, look, seagulls are coming back. So
it stopped because they figured that it was a fake one because it wasn't.
Yeah, attacking. It wasn't doing anything.
What if you got like a fake hawk body and put it on a drone and started harassing the birds?
Yeah.
And then took a dive at a couple of them. Then they would start thinking, it's real.
Well, one thing that they did discover, so the person who had the contract last year, they had a couple hawks and other birds that he came onto site and he tried to do, because you can harass them and chase them away to stop them from nesting. Because that's the problem. And once they nest, the babies come back the next year and so on, it compounds. But anyways, he found out that cormorants are a very aggressive bird, and his hawks weren't aggressive enough, and his hawks were getting beaten up. Yeah. So, I guess you'd have to have a very large, I don't know the
types of hawks. Well, the bald eagles are coming back.
Bald eagles, and some people, like I know at Toronto Airport, they one of the companies that does it there does have a bald eagle. Or a couple bald eagles in their repertoire. But, yeah.
A California condor. Show up with like four of those.
How scary would that be?
Right? All of a sudden the cormorants look up and boom. Okay, boys, party's done. Let's pack her up and go home.
One of those condors is like the size of a small human.
Right?
Much larger wings than a human, but.
See? Yeah, so, you guys just thinking inside the box. Yeah. That's your problem. You need to think outside the box.
Yeah, well, outside the box, there's still rules. We're not allowed to bring harm to the birds. We can just harass them to stop them from nesting. Well, that's the key thing.
If they can't land, they can't nest.
Yeah.
So that's why I say if you put up some sort of netting, which they can see and keeps them, like you put it on sticks sort of stuff, right? Like corners and if it keeps them like 4 feet off, then they can't land.
Or just one of those, just put a bunch of those wind-powered whirligig things that spin like a helicopter and just put it close to the ground and so it just spins. And
our cherry trees in the back,
We
were told, get pie plates and hang them up. It'll keep the birds away. Bull hooey.
They like
you know what plates? I've got in my tree? Pie plates and birds. No cherries. I'll just say it. Anyway, we're sort of going off topic here. We followed him and he sort of stopped. We're just hoping that he's not finding any fish on Duffy's Creek. We did see a couple small ones, and there was people fishing and stuff, but I think there's just like a couple of small suckers and carp that are starting.
Oh, okay.
They're out there looking for trout because trout opener happened. I don't think the trout have started up that way.
Is there a spring and a fall migration? What is it? Salmon in the fall. What is there?
In September is usually after the big rains.
But is there a spring migration of fish?
Yeah, everybody goes up this spring as well.
So,
I don't know. But there were a few people. Some guy was out with his son, his little kids, doing some fishing. And I think at that point it's more for just getting out.
Yeah, exactly. You're just out and doing stuff.
Yeah. lots of birds and squirrels, but nothing bigger.
Yeah. So you didn't get any recordings?
Got some video recording.
Yeah.
So there's one little swift that you got to go. It's a narrow spot.
Oh, okay. Because
it goes through, there's gravel on, like, right up to the surface on one side, and there's logs on the other. Totally forgetting at this point, I had put my GoPro on the side of the canoe with a suction cup. And as I'm watching over on this side to make sure I don't hit the gravel, bang! Knocks the GoPro right off.
Oh.
But I have it. I have the suction cup.
Oh, and a rope.
And a rope onto one of my thwarts.
Yeah.
So you never lose it, right?
Yeah.
Learned that trick ages ago, my friend. But it's just like, now it's pointing like backwards. Yeah. It's like, oh, I wanted that footage. Because you totally forget.
Yeah.
Right? That you've got a camera on the side now as opposed to straight up on the front or off the gunwale somewhere, right? So, now, I'm not going to get preachy.
Okay.
Going to try not to.
Garbage?
As we were zipping back, we saw a stand-up paddleboarder. Shorts and a light shirt. It was a nice day, but that water is still super freaking cold. Yeah. Yeah, he's out there like he's in Miami, for crying out loud.
He is in the creek, though, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm not
the river.
I'm not trying to
excuse it. No, John said the same thing, and I'm like, but when you're by yourself and you fall in and you're totally soaked in that cold water.
Exactly.
And then you've now got an hour paddle back
to. Did he have a life jacket on?
I did not see a life jacket. No, I can't say that he didn't have one of those
belt
things or whatever, but I did not see a life jacket on.
Yeah.
When we got back to the takeout where we were parked, there was a couple of people with kayaks getting in.
Mm-hmm.
No cold water immersion gear or anything.
Right now there's
many things in the news.
Yeah.
If you just Google in the news, kayaking, canoeing, the amount of rescues that are happening, cold water deaths, and all,
it's like the on cold a continual shock that's the problem. I mean, if you fall in or you turn over, you flip or whatever, it's that cold shock. It makes you want to gasp, and you could suck in air, and your muscles all clench up, and you're, and unless you're practiced at it, it could be very dangerous.
Yeah. Anyway, not going to get preachy. Even to your own. Sorry if you did. If you die, can I have your paddleboard? We used to do that in school. If you die, can I have your stereo?
Yeah.
And then we all went out and did something stupid.
Yeah.
We did pick up trash as we paddled along. We always do. Mostly pop bottles, like plastic pop bottles and water bottles. Some bunch of styrofoam.
Oh,
some of them are like worm containers, that sort of stuff. Fishing line, floats, like bobbers, that sort of stuff. I did find a really big bucket, which we put all the garbage into. So that was sitting at the front of the boat. And when I would lean over and pick up a bottle, I would throw it and try to get it in the bucket.
Oh, okay.
There is a reason I do not play for the Toronto Raptors. I'm like bouncing stuff off the gunnels. It bounces off of one gunnel, off the other gunnel, and back out of the boat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I found a tennis ball. Okay, this is easy. You know, nothing but net. Yeah, nothing but not even the canoe.
Maybe the bow can move on you. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. It was the wind.
Yes. The Coriolis effect of the earth spinning.
Yeah. We need to get one of those, you know, those grippers they have?
Oh, yeah.
With like on a pole and you just, you know, like grab things. Mm-hmm. You had them as kids. You get them at the dollar store or something like that or Walmart. John's got one, but he always forgets it.
Yeah.
I'm going to like grab a couple and just leave them in my truck.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is a lot of stuff that we couldn't get close enough to the shore to get.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, when I'm paddling along, I saw something and I went over and it's a heavy-duty metal fish rod holder.
Oh.
Boom. There's a spike that goes right into the ground.
Yeah.
And you put your pole in it, and there's all these different tightening devices.
Yeah.
Like, this thing probably costs, like, $40-$50.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was just too far for me to reach.
Oh, yeah.
So I scooched all the way over to the side, put my paddle into the mud.
To balance.
And then John leaned over into my boat from his boat to hold it. And I'm reaching way over. just managed to get grab it, like a couple fingers on it, and just pulled it forward enough that floop came out.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, geez, it was like a circus out there. But
on the weekend in Bowmanville, there was a creek cleanup thing, and Stella found out about it through her school or for something. And so Siobhan and Stella, they walked the Bowmanville Creek with a whole bunch of other people. And they, between the two of them, they picked up 4 full bags of garbage.
Yeah.
Just the two of them. They said they found like, you know, some squirrel and dead squirrels and dead rabbits and an iPhone and stuff like that. But otherwise they picked up a lot of garbage. And the grabber things probably might have been a good thing because, when they got back, they couldn't leave the front door without taking their socks off because their shoes and their socks were soaking wet. They were filthy. They were up to their elbows with muck, and they had all these little, the plant things that stick to your clothes.
Oh, the burrs.
Yeah, the burrs and stuff. So they both of them immediately showered. But, yeah, they picked up 4 bags of garbage.
Yeah.
And they weren't the only ones there. There was, like, a bunch of people, they said.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like I say, every time we go down the river, we just swing by on one side or the other, because we're never in a hurry going up and down. And we just pick up a whole bunch of stuff, and then the big pain in the arse is for getting garbage bags, so when you get back to the truck, you just load it all into the garbage bag, right? And then tie it up, but the bucket, at least we can fill the bucket and just carry it all up to the garbage is there and leave it there for the waste people.
It's nice that a lot of people get out and do these cleanup, but you know what would be better? Like top shelf better. Would be if people didn't litter in the first place.
Is it your first day on the planet?
Apparently.
Welcome to Earth, buddy.
It still shocks me that people do these things.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? No, it was a good day. Weather was great. Like I say, it was the 2 days, nice, sunny, bit of a breeze, gusty at times, but the sun was out and it was nice. Temperature, you know, raised a few degrees, but we were out there and stuff. Nice to be on the water for sure. Then came home and cleaned out the garage. Put all the winter stuff is now at the back of the garage.
Oh, yeah.
And the summer stuff and boats are all paddling stuff is all at the front of the garage.
Spring and fall thing.
It's like the water that turns over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the garage does the same thing. All the easy to get paddling stuff now is at the front as opposed to the back. I did, mind you, I totally forgot after last year's epic adventures to take all the hooks off all my fishing rods.
Oh.
Guess how I found out?
Ouch.
Yeah, right in my finger.
Wait a sec. That's not supposed to hurt.
That fishing rod's not supposed to be pokey like that. I don't know if you saw, but I never bothered to take the roof racks off my truck because why bother? It's time for paddling season.
The only risk is people stealing them.
That's my big thing, so. Anyway, the Y rack I've got on the back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're not going to be able to get the roof rack off the back, off the top.
Yeah.
But
that locks on.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was all fun and good to be out on the water paddling. And I think I'm going to go this Saturday because Sundays I'm not able to.
Okay.
But John's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll just go hang out at the marsh and do some recording and stuff like that. I want to test all this gear. I mean, a lot of people now, like when I go and we're all in different boats.
I like that. So, I liked having the autonomy of like, I'm out with some people, but I can do my own thing. I don't have to, hey, you want to head that way? Hey, you want to
When we're paddling, like John's on one side of the river, I'm on the other side of the river. He's picking garbage up from over there.
Yeah. Full coverage.
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll see what happens this weekend. I remember the guys going from Ireland down to Istanbul.
Oh, yes. So we just talked about them 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, they were almost there.
And one of the guys was injured. He had to leave. A friend was brought in.
Yep.
And so on.
Do it.
Yeah.
So Johnny Coyne has become the first person to kayak from Ireland to Asia. Modern times.
Yeah.
The Irish adventurer set out on September 2024 with Liam Cotter. Countryman Ryan Fallow joined the duo later, but only Coyne did the entire distance because Liam ended up getting hurt.
Hurt his shoulder. Did they say how he hurt his shoulder? I'm curious.
You're going to ask me to remember that.
Doesn't matter.
Back
doesn't
now.
Matter.
At the start of April, 210 days after setting off, they reached the Black Sea, their last major milestone before Istanbul. The next big goal was to reunite with Cotter so that he could join them at the finish. After the shoulder injury, Cotter couldn't paddle because he remained in the wings, helping with logistics. And now the trio wanted to finish together. Cotter wanted to stick to their human-powered plan, so as soon as his shoulder mended enough, he started cycling to catch up with his pals in Bulgaria.
Couldn't find a car?
Well, he's trying to keep the human-powered plan.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
Yeah.
On day 225, he rejoined them after 3 months apart, ready to kayak with them for the last week. Final week started, and if you've listened to our previous episodes about this, there was all the things that had happened along the way. Like, anything that could go wrong or be stopped, or it happened.
But as far as plans go, if I could just show up for the last week of some grueling adventure.
Right?
And raise my arms in victory after just the last week.
I see nothing wrong with that.
I did it!
I'm showing up. Next time you guys do the Meanest Link, I'm showing up last day.
I'm only here for the last segment.
How was it? It was easy.
I'm so rested.
I don't know what these people are griping about.
Exactly.
He started paddling from Bulgaria into Turkey, and once again, the border crossing was anything but simple. That was the big thing, was the border crossings.
So, but European countries, aren't they? Well, it is Turkey.
Yeah. Coyne tried to arrange their entry with the Coast Guard, and a customs boat met them as they approached the border. However, it informed them that they were not allowed to land. They had to wait on the Bulgarian side with their boats, in their boats, for 3 hours.
Hmm.
Temperature dropped, water became choppy, and it was dark before they were allowed to get off the water. But still not in Turkey.
Go on that side of the beach.
On the beach, police questioned them, searched their kayaks. As they slept that night, the police refused to leave to ensure they would not cross the border overnight. Next morning, they were finally allowed to cross into Turkey. With 4 days left, their excitement was palpable and only increased when a pod of dolphins swam next to them as they paddled along the Turkish coast. On April 25th, they landed in Istanbul to cheers from the friends and family who had come to meet them. "This has been the greatest moment of my life so far," Coyne had commented as he exited his kayak. So congratulations to them. There was video, however, because they landed on the 25th.
Yeah.
April 23rd, there was a 6.2 magnitude earthquake.
Oh.
So they were, I know they were wondering in their video, is this going to affect us actually being able to finish?
Yeah.
And the day they landed, April 25th, there was a 4.3 magnitude earthquake.
That's mild.
It's just Mother Earth
rejoicing
at your achievements.
Good
your
job, boys.
Good job. Rumble, rumble, rumble. So congrats to them and for doing that. But so, and persevering through it all, too, with all the little.
They set out September 2024. I don't know how much distance, but it was at 210 days or so.
And then 225 for the last
total?
Week.
Yeah.
So it was like 230,
mm-hmm.
something like that. Yeah.
Huh.
Long trip.
Yeah.
Lots of ups and downs and issues. And
it seems like they kind of were just kind of winging it. Because what was it? The canals closed.
Yeah, canals was closed by the time they got there.
So they had to do an 800-kilometer portage or something.
With wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple other things that they didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess unless you know to ask the question, you're not going to ask the question.
Exactly.
Right? So.
But I think that's half the fun.
Just
winging it.
That's half the fun, man. Have you ever been on a canoe trip with man camping? Scott?
I paddled. We did Tobermory one time. We kayaked.
Scott wasn't there.
Scott wasn't there?
No, that was Dwayne and Alan.
Oh, it was Dwayne Nellon. Yeah.
You haven't been. Because Scott's the, just tell me when to show up and where we're going.
Yeah.
He said, what are you just showing up? I don't think
I've
ever
paddled with him. I've hiked with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because people were worried when they found out him and I were going on a trip together. That's when I got my Dossier nickname.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait. You know how Scott does his trips, right? So my thing with him is, yeah, where are we going? How many pairs of underwear will I need? He could show up with just a bag of underwear and be ready to go.
I'm off the same way when I go with the boys. It's like, because we'll arrive. It's like, oh, okay. I don't know. Whatever the plan is, I'm with you. It's like,
I'm in.
I'm in. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he'll just wing it.
Don't
whatever.
Tell me any details. I don't want to know. It's going to be a voyage of discovery.
Right? Where are we? Derek says as he's the last survivor. The zombie apocalypse.
I was on a trip with a guy from work. There was like four of us. And we went up to Solace Lands, north of Lady Evelyn Shearwater. And so we got in there. And it was a long drive, logging roads, whatever. Hit the area where we're going to paddle. And it was a long route. And like on day three, we were chatting about something and he said, wait, what? How long is this trip? And we all looked at him. What do you mean? He goes, I thought this was like 3 or 4 days. No, it's 7. He's like, oh, it's like, what?
Yeah. There are certain things you do need to know.
His main concern, credit to him, is his main concern at the time was that he had only planned for about 4 days because he grows the giant pumpkins. So he had one of those giant totes of fertilized water. And so his wife was watering his gigantic pumpkin while he was away. And he had 4 days of water in that thing. And so she had to make do with unfertilized water because she just like topped up with hose water and did her best, and he couldn't reach out to her, and so she was worried that he had died.
And she'd inherited a giant pumpkin.
Yes.
Oh, Charlie Brown. It's the great pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Dave Dudley. Yeah.
So what did you get in the divorce settlement? Pumpkin.
A pumpkin.
That's it? Oh, he's a big pumpkin. A really big pumpkin.
He was paying like 50, 80 bucks per seed for some of these prized pumpkin seeds. But, you know, it was his hobby. He loved it. He nurtured and cradled and cuddled those pumpkins.
You know what? It's so easy to make fun of that.
I know.
But everybody's got their hobby. Yeah, you know, that's your hobby, man.
He enjoyed it.
He's, I mean, people look at us. What we had the conversation there a little while ago, and what'd you pay for your canoe? Oh, it was almost $5,000. What?
I know. Exactly, right?
Yeah.
People, non-canoeing people go, what? For a canoe?
Yeah.
It's like, what? I don't understand.
It's not your great grandpa's fiberglass tank anymore. You know, so, yeah. It is getting nicer out, and there are a lot of people that are still itching to get on the water. If you are like me, go to the National Film Board of Canada.
Oh, yes.
And search for Bill Mason, because on my computer. Because if you are doing work on your computer and you can play your web browser behind the scenes and you watch it enough times, you know exactly what's happening in Water Walker.
Oh, you don't have to see it anymore.
You don't need to see. You know what's going on. You know where he is. You know he's just capsized. You know he's at the waterfall. Yeah. You know he's portaging. You see him up on the rock cliffs, look overlooking lakes. You know what's going on if you've watched it enough times. But just to hear the film, the audio track from Water Walker, do it. www.nfb.ca, National Film Board of Canada. Go there and Google Bill Mason. Well, not Google search.
Yeah.
Do the search for Bill Mason. He's got all his stuff's there.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
But yeah, Water Walker and all that. Even on lunch, if you're sitting there at your desk eating lunch.
A little bit of Water Walker.
A little bit of Water Walker.
And his custom We have GoPros nowadays.
Oh, but that hockey helmet.
His hockey helmet with video rigged.
Motorcycle helmet or whatever it was, with the rigged with that big camera stuck to it.
And he had to have a counterweight on one side because the camera was so heavy on the other side. And you look at him, he looks like something, some futuristic robot in a science movie or something.
Yeah. I just like the weight on your neck.
I know.
From that thing.
Because just even the helmet alone would be heavy, let alone a camera, heavy film camera, and counterweight to balance his head so he's not always tilting to one side.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow.
Good times. Better you than me, Bill.
Yeah.
Boundary Waters. Boundary Waters.
So didn't we just...
We talked about Boundary Waters, but we didn't talk about this.
Did we talk about...
Because things changed.
Yes, so it changed. So last week you talked about...
waterfalls.
Yeah, waterfalls. And I think I had mentioned also the fact that if you have a permit, it's still valid, but they're not issuing new permits.
So they've put out a little thingy here. Paddlers planning to venture into the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness this summer need to make alternative plans if they had hoped to pick up their permits at the Kawishkiwi, I always want to put a K in there, Ranger Station in Ely or the Gunflint Station in Grand Marais. Forest Service notified permit holders via email that effective immediately those locations will not be issuing permits this year. Canoeists can still pick up their permits at a variety of locations, including the other ranger stations in northeastern Minnesota and several businesses in Duluth, Ely, Grand Marais, and up the Gunflint Trail. The ranger stations in Ely and Grand Marais are two of the most popular places for paddlers to pick up permits and watch the required video that educates visitors on camping rules and etiquette in the Boundary Waters, a federally protected wilderness area. Canoeists with a permit during the quota season, which runs from May 1st to September 30th, now need to modify the reservations at recreation.gov and select a new location to pick up their permits. Forest official did not give a reason for the change, but Jason Zaborski, owner of Ely Outfitting Company, says that in a conference call, cooperating businesses were told it's because of budget and staffing issues within the Forest Service. We're not going to get political here.
Nope.
There are a lot of changes that are happening at the Forest Service right now because of budget and staffing issues, and those things are going to impact Boundary Water users' experiences this summer. This is just one of those ways. Example, he's worried the basic maintenance could suffer, including the clearage of portage trails that connect lakes and rivers in the wilderness. Spokesperson for Superior National Forest declined an interview request. She said the agency would issue a statement via social media. She said the focus was to first notify permit holders and area businesses. Zaborski says that during the conference call with cooperating businesses, Forest Service officials said that 3,800 permits were scheduled to be issued at Kawishwi Station in Ely and 1,700 permits at the Gunflint Station in Grand Marais. That's a lot of permits. A lot of people need to make changes. Oof. Outfitters will absorb much of the additional work in issuing permits, which Zaborski said will add a significant amount of time to their work days. Businesses that write permits are allowed to charge $2 for the service, something many choose not to do.
Yeah, it's not a lot of money to issue.
He said his bigger concern is the loss of face time between visitors and forest staff. The one time the Forest Service gets to interact with Boundary Waters users face-to-face and actually educate them on the rules and regulations and best practices and leave no trace is when they issue a permit. And what's 3,800 plus 1,700?
5,500.
5,500
permits.
Now, there may be more people on than just one person on that permit, right?
Yeah.
So we'll call it groups. 5,500 groups of people not getting that face to face.
They'll get some sort of face to face, but then not this. The custom. So they'll still watch the video, but it's not going to be people from. It'll be outfitters that do it, so mm-hmm. they're not going to care. You're not going to get that. Hey, this is what you should and shouldn't do. Yada yada yada. So there's going to be a lot of people who. Anybody experienced will know the proper ways of doing things, but if anybody
brand who's
new to it, then they'll be like, oh, I didn't know I had to hang my food in a tree this way. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know.
Don't just poop everywhere and anywhere.
I didn't know I couldn't just poop on the portage trail.
You don't just throw my leftovers into the lake.
Yeah, nobody ever told me that rule.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's going to be a little bit less education front-loaded on your vacations into the boundary waters.
Mm-hmm. Not like since COVID happened that we haven't noticed anything like that.
There's an explosion of people going to the backcountry.
Yeah. But we're not getting preachy here today.
Nope, not at all.
No preachy, no political.
We're being sarcastic and fun.
Yes. So, So if you were planning on picking up your permits at one of those two places, you might want to look into that because
and that's for people who have a permit, not like you're able to buy new permits.
Yeah, not like me. Not like you. Do you have a permit? No, you know why? Because you're still not taking the time to go there.
No, I'm not.
Why?
It's an 18-hour drive.
So what?
Without
we had
stops.
This discussion many, many, many. 18, I think we just had this discussion
18
last
hours
week.
If you don't stop for gas, food, bathroom breaks. So it's a 25, 28-hour trip.
Do you not know what a big pop bottle is? Do you not know what a pee bottle is?
Yeah. Let me see if I can train my children to pee into a pop bottle.
Open the door, van.
What if they have to have a poo?
Stick your butt out the sunroof.
Let it roll off the back window.
Right? Surprise the people in the car behind you.
Is he mooning me?
Wait a minute.
That just went sideways.
No, that's when you do. Okay, we are at, because we have the en routes here in Ontario,
yes.
Right? That going north, east, west, south sort of thing. So you pull into one of those, you can get gas, you can get food, you can get bathrooms and all that. It's just like, okay, you know what? No, bathroom, boom, 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 boom. We're going to go to Timmy's or whatever, and we're out. Mm-hmm. We're not spending an hour here.
Oh, yeah, not an hour.
Pee, food, gone.
Yeah. Stretch your legs. Pitter
patter, let's get at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, no. We're not sitting down and eating here. We're taking it to go. Not like the good old days. We used to drive. Do you ever remember the Voyageur restaurants across Canada?
No.
They had those big red pointy things on the roof.
No.
The pinnacle on the roof. Anyway, we'd go to, or the Husky stations.
Okay.
And you'd stop there. And everybody get out, stretch their legs, go to the bathroom, and you do a sit-down dinner. Like meal. Grab a burger or something like that.
Yes.
And then, oh my God, no! No, I don't got time for that. My kids are going to starve before I do that.
You're going to eat standing. Yeah. We've been sitting in the car for 5 hours. You could stand while you eat.
Right? Stretch your legs out. Yeah. I'll get you a burger. You can eat in the car.
Yeah.
I don't care. There's a new thing happening at the Canadian Canoe Museum. They're just like coming out with lots of stuff for the summer.
This one's interesting.
Yeah. Launching 2025, the Canadian Canoe Museum's Builders in Residence program welcomes canoe and kayak builders and makers from across the country to share their skills, stories, and knowledge in an immersive hands-on setting. You don't want me to get my hands in
there.
Do
they say how long each individual...
There
we go. All of May is head... Yeah, I see.
They just say in May, June, July, October.
So I'm thinking this is something that Mike Burns could do. He could...
Right? He'd probably want to go check some of these out.
Uh-huh. Or build his canoe in front of a bunch of people. He does it on Facebook as it is.
Well, he just takes pictures though, right?
Yeah.
In 2025, the Canadian Canoe Museum is excited to host four builders set up in the Daglish Family Living Traditions Center. This unique program offers a rare opportunity to watch watercraft take shape before your eyes, fostering a deep appreciation for the water, for the craftsmanship, materials, and traditions that shape these vessels. Each will bring a unique perspective to their methods, drawing from intergenerational knowledge and accomplished careers.
Very cool.
Join us as we celebrate the makers, the methods, and the meaning behind these extraordinary vessels. Which is cool. I mean, they have their things where you can go and learn to make carve a paddle and all that sort of stuff. But to see them actually make boats and stuff. So in May, from Headwater Canoes, from Wakefield, Quebec, Jamie Bartle of Headwater Canoes will demonstrate the building of a wood and canvas canoe and provide clinics on the techniques of key construction stages. The completed canoe will be used in the museum's on-water program fleet.
Very cool.
So go there, check it out, and see what various bits and pieces. And you also get the opportunity, because if you wanted thinking of doing this at home, you can get the opportunity to talk to somebody with tons of experience building these and get that. June Pinouk, visiting from Kitigan ZB First Nation in Quebec. Pinouk will construct an Algonquin-style birch bark canoe and assist with the development of a school program related to Algonquin bark canoe construction.
Huh.
That's pretty cool. In July, Helen Peltier, visiting from Fort William First Nations in Ontario. Artist Helen Peltier will teach and demonstrate the art of birch bark basket making, etching, and moccasin making.
Huh.
That's pretty cool. You know, I bet you Stella would like something like that.
Mm-hmm, she would.
October, and we're going to butcher this one, Kayakut Society.
Kayakut.
Visiting from Iqaluit, Nunavut. Senior members of the society will build South Baffin-style kayaks and share their knowledge and paddling skills through lessons and programs. These kayak will also be used in the museum's on-water program fleet.
That's pretty cool. That's neat. So there's these four of them. So May, June, July, and October.
They're not having one in August because I'm not here.
I remember... Yeah, that's why they didn't do it.
Yeah, that's why.
I remember one of the times we went up to the Canoe Museum in the old building, which was what, the Evinrude Factory or something? Mm-hmm. Anyways, when we were there, there was a guy building a canoe, but he was covering it in all those little tiny chiclets of mirror.
Glass and that, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was across the street from the Evinrude.
Yeah. So I think it's a carryover of that same sort of program where somebody is there working in front of you.
And you can ask questions.
And I believe the room that they're talking about is the one right off the main lobby of the new Canoe Museum.
Yep.
It's all behind glass, but there's it's
you can
like
go
a,
in and
it's
check
a
it
workshop.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go in and check it out.
Yeah.
Through collaborative relationships, hands-on experiences, and storytelling, the Builders in Residence program reflects the museum's commitment to education, fostering meaningful engagement with indigenous peoples, expanding access to knowledge and the collection, and growing the national reach. Visitors of all ages will have the opportunity to observe and engage with builders and makers, asking questions and exploring the artisanry behind paddled watercraft, ensuring these traditions remain vibrant and inspire future generations. To share these builds beyond the museum, we are producing a series of mini documentaries showcasing the craftsmanship, stories, and techniques of our builders in residence. These films will be available on our website in the months following each build, allowing audiences across Canada and beyond to learn, connect, and celebrate the practice of canoe and kayak building from anywhere. And so, I mean, if you go to one of these things and you're asking questions and you're like, oh, wait a minute, he did this funky thing, then hopefully you can go back into these documentaries and say, yeah, oh, that's what he did. That's what he did, sort of thing, right? So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool to be doing that sort of thing.
I'm going to have to go check some of these out.
Yeah.
Get the kids up there with me.
Definitely October.
Yes. Yes. So the
birch bark canoe. That'd be cool.
So birch bark is in June.
Yeah.
Basket weaving is in July.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a kayak Baffin-style kayak in October.
Mm-hmm. Nah, I'll just go to the all May, June, July, yeah. October.
Hmm.
Have the cool. Canadian Canoe Museum. Go to their website, and they'll have a lot more information. And if you have questions, you can contact them through their website and get all your answers. So I was, because, you know, we're not doing segues here. do you remember a few, maybe it was last year, we talked about everything. We're talking about rafts. We're talking about, you know, anything to do with rafts, we talk about, even if it's not an actual raft. So we talked about monkeys on giant rafts going across the ocean like 35 million years ago.
Yeah.
Researchers have long wondered how iguanas got to Fiji in the South Pacific.
Yeah, where'd they come from?
Most modern-day iguanas live in the Americas, thousands of miles away and one giant ocean away. They thought maybe they scurried through Asia or Australia before volcanic activity pushed Fiji so far away. But new research suggests that millions of years ago, iguanas pulled off the 5,000-mile or 8,000-kilometer odyssey on a raft of floating vegetation.
But this has got to be a complete guess.
Masses of uprooted trees and small plants. The journey is thought to be a record further than any other land-dwelling vertebrate has ever traveled on the ocean. Well, I don't know if these people heard about the monkeys.
Mm, we did the same thing with monkeys.
Did the same thing. Yeah. Scientists think that's how iguanas got to the Galapagos Islands off of Ecuador and between islands in the Caribbean. Initially, they thought Fiji might be a bit too far for such a trip, but a new study, researchers inspected the genes of 14 iguana species spanning the Americas, the Caribbean, and Fiji, and they discovered the Fijian iguanas were most closely related to the desert iguanas from North America.
Huh.
And that the two groups split off around 31 million years ago.
Wait.
Which would be 4 million years after the monkeys.
So, wow. Mm-hmm.
Researchers created a statistical model using the information and other tidbits about where iguanas live today and how they may spread. It suggested the iguanas most likely floated to Fiji from North America. Given what we know now, the result is by far the most strongly supported, says Kevin DuQueros, an evolutionary biologist at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History. The journey from North America to Fiji could have taken a few months, but these desert iguanas would have been ideal passengers because they were adept at resisting dehydration and could have snacked on the plants underfoot.
There you go.
That totally makes sense.
It does. So yeah, that's one of the things I was wondering is like you'd have to be able to survive long times without fresh water.
And under the hot sun.
Hot sun. And they have to be able to consume something basic like whatever this floating mat of algae and tree stuff.
Yeah.
So iguanas could do that.
If you had to pick a vertebrate to survive a long trip on a raft across an ocean, iguanas would be the one, says study author Simon Scarpetta from the University of San Francisco. Many Fijian iguana species are endangered, and an invasive green iguana roams the islands today. So where'd the green iguana come from?
Came in on another raft.
Figuring out where these creatures came from can equip scientists with the tools to better protect them in the future.
That's why you need customs and inspections.
Right? 31 million years ago. There's evidence that early primates, including monkeys, crossed the Atlantic Ocean on natural rafts of vegetation and debris. This is a proposed theory on how primates colonized South America, potentially around 35 million years ago.
That's a long time ago.
So that's 4 million years ago before these lizard freaks showed up.
So I was thinking about this today when you said that we're going to be discussing it. And I was thinking, how would they end up on these rafts? And so one of the things that we've seen is when there's a a tsunami, it runs inland and then washes everything out to sea. So you'd end up with a lot of
debris,
monkeys or iguanas or whatever, on these mats of floating debris. They're going to be swimming. It's like, I need to get on something. They end up getting on that floating mat of debris. And then it's like, well, there's no land. And then
that is their land.
Maybe a couple months later, they end up on another continent. So there you go.
I can see how it would work, but...
But you're not going to jump on this thing voluntarily. It's not like they're out for on a voyage of discovery or anything.
Party iguanas.
Chances are it was a tsunami or something that washed them out to sea.
Yeah. Could be. So that's how... Now they're figuring out that these giant rafts...
Yeah.
So the monkeys and the iguanas...
Yeah.
...were rafting long before people were rafting.
And yeah, they have. And I guess the core part of it is... They had to say why genetically and DNA wise do these two species on different continents match up?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they so closely matched?
They did the exact same thing with the monkeys.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, I don't think these two groups have talked. The monkey people and people,
or maybe they did. That's how they came up with theory. Hey, those monkey people just talked about this,
or maybe they just read the article and said, "Let's check out our iguanas."
Yeah. Maybe it's the same people. Maybe they said, "Hey, let's check out the iguana DNA."
Yeah, maybe they're going to start doing it with other animals too, like maybe people.
Maybe
maybe the people were on a giant raft of vegetation and made it to North America.
Yeah.
Who knows now?
Exactly.
Apparently, rafting around the world was the thing to do 30-plus million years ago.
God, that's so long ago.
Giant raft of vegetation, hop on. We're going places. Get in, guys. We're going to the new world.
Back in the day, that was high speed travel. Raft.
Hey, what do you do in the next 3 months? Want to head across the other side of the planet? Come on, hop on this big old vegetation raft with me. I'll take you places. Hey, baby. Want to go to the planets?
It is super interesting, though.
You know what? It really is cool that they're figuring all this sort of stuff out.
We're discovering more and more every day about our planet.
But like I say, I just see the word raft. I'm like, hello. one last thing here. UL Solution. I came across this article, and I went down a bit of a rabbit hole on this one, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but there is an important part at the end. UL Solution performs personal flotation device testing and certification services. So you know when you get your life jacket, there's all these little symbols and da-da-da-da.
And
UL is a big one I've
seen. One of the symbols.
Yeah. Technological advancements evolving regulatory requirements and a growing market preference for quality products that meet specific safety standards are creating new opportunities and challenges in the personal flotation devices market. As a global leader in safety science, UL Solution helps optimize new potentials and mitigates risks. Their testing and certification services help bring safer, innovative PFDs confidently
and efficiently to target markets.
That just didn't sound right, that word.
Confidently.
Confidently and efficiently to target markets.
I think it's because right next to an acronym. PFD is confidently and efficiently to target markets.
UL Solutions offers testing and certification for PFDs to regulatory requirements and standards in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. To meet federal carriage requirements in the U.S. and Canada, they work with the United States Coast Guard and Transport Canada to test devices that are intended to be used both commercial and on recreational vessels. UL Solutions has decades of experience in PFD testing and global regulatory expertise. UL Solutions is a recognized independent testing laboratory for PFDs in accordance with the U.S. Code of Federal Regulations. So they're not being paid by somebody to say, yes, these are good ones, right? They're independent. It is an EU-notified body for personal protective equipment regulation and the Marine Equipment Directive for life jackets, buoyancy aids, immersion suits, and thermal protective aids, and can issue certificates for the CE mark and wheel mark. And they are a UK-approved body for the personal protective equipment regulation and the merchant shipping Marine Equipment Regulations for life jackets, buoyancy aids, immersion suits, thermal protective aids, and are able to issue certificates for the UK CA mark and the Red Ensign mark. The following, and this is the important part, is a notification from UL Solutions in regards to personal flotation devices that bear unauthorized UL marks for the United States and Canada. Personal flotation devices have not been evaluated by UL Solutions to the appropriate safety standards, and it's unknown if the product complies with any safety requirements. The name of the product is Pally Paddle PFDs. UL Solutions recommends that personal flotation devices be discarded. These personal flotation devices bear an unauthorized UL certification mark and the following. Pally Paddle PFDs from Presley Place, Victoria, B.C., www.pallypaddle.com, says made in China, says USGC, United Coast Guard approved, TC, Transport Canada approved, ANSI, CAN, and UL number, lot number 220-21507, level 70 buoyancy aid. Location of the products were sold by Pally Paddle in Canada. So they've put, whoever made these in China, has put the UL Solutions.
But they were never tested by UL.
And they were never tested. So if you have bought a PFD by Pally Paddle, Google UL Solutions unauthorized PFD, and it'll take you to the page where more info, and you can see this PFD in question.
It may not perform the function that you it was designed for, mm-hmm. and may not meet the function and use that you plan on using it for.
Yeah, it may not be up to certification mm-hmm. standards and safety standards and whatnot. So, yeah, that's what UL Solutions does, is they perform these. So now they're finding that there's these Pally Paddle is selling these PFDs, yeah. and they have not been certified. So if you bought the – now, I don't know if this is for all life jackets sold by Pally Paddle, but it's this particular one.
Yes.
Like I say, if you just Google UL Solutions Unauthorized PFD, it's the first thing that comes up. Click on it. And it'll take you right to the thing saying with all the information on it, on which ones it is, the approval numbers, lot numbers, and all that sort of stuff. Check it out because you don't want to be finding out, oops, when you're out on the water. That's all I got this week. You got anything else?
I've got nothing to add.
You know what I got to add? We're having a drink, Johnny Walker Black Label this week. Because somebody didn't bring beer.
I went.
And somebody else ran out of beer.
Yes.
So we're drinking
I went
the
to get some,
label.
But they were closed. They're closed Monday, Tuesdays. What are you going to do?
Stripper beer, dude.
Yeah.
Got to get the stripper beer.
Yes. Yeah.
You're finally going to get there on a day they're open, and they're like, oh, no, we're all out of everything.
Yeah.
We're closing down. Johnny Walker Black Label, today's episode brought to you by Blended Scotch Whiskey. Kevin Callan might be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so nothing else?
Nothing else to add.
Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. 480 of them now.
Ooh.
20 away from the magic number 500.
20 weeks. Yeah.
20 divided by 4 weeks in a month is
26 months. Weeks is 6 months. So it's just 5 months.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. if you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.